In the same way that the sixth spiritual center, chakra, is the balance between the fifth and seventh heavenly spiritual centers in the head, and the second spiritual center, chakra, is the balance of the lowest first and the third spiritual sex centers. Thus, we have an upper heavenly triad, a lower earthly triad, and it is the fourth spiritual center, which is often allegorically portrayed as the Son of Man in the scriptures, which is the balance of what is portrayed as heaven and earth. The totality of mind is the balance between the seven spiritual centers and the physical body, and the mind is manifest in the 12 spheres of the tree of life. And this is the primary reason why the paths of the monk and yogi teach the need to get above the mind not being able to engage the mind and evolve it to wholeness, because of the negation of the lower centers. The 12 tribes of Israel have absolutely nothing to do with an historical people, but rather represent an allegorical portrayal of the mind as patterned in the tree of life, as is the higher presentation of the 12 disciples an allegorical portrayal of the perfected mind in the Gospels. And this is why Paul warned the Galatians who are attempting to embrace Jewish ritualistic ways, stated to them, "Tell me, yea, that desire to be under the law, do ye not hear the law?" And then Paul goes on to explain to those who want to attempt to read the written word literally, in an historical context as Christians do today, "For it is written that Abraham had two sons, the one by a bondmaid, the other by a free woman. But he who was of the bondwoman was born after the flesh. But he of the free woman was by promise." Which things are an allegory. Gal 4:21-24 KJV. One of the main differences is seen in the fact that while the Old Testament allegorical presentation of the 12 spheres is divided by virtue of being portrayed as tribes, the Gospel accounts present the 12 spheres as being singular and in harmony with that wholeness which is presented in the name Yeshua/Joshua/Jesus. Thus, what is presented in the Gospel account is the perfection and completed wholeness of the Old Testament and the law, and this is why Paul stated that the coming of Jesus represented the end of the law, or more correctly, the perfection and objective of the law. And therein lies the problem, in that the majority of Gentiles were to carnal and heathen to even begin to understand the esoteric truths that are presented in the allegorical gospel account. And they made the grave error of reading the scriptures literally and historically, in the manner of the Pharisees, as stated under the heading of intellectual idiots, quoting the church historian Eusebius, who writes of the doctrines conceived by the early Christians Papias and Irenaeus. Papias reproduces other stories communicated to him by word of mouth, together with some otherwise unknown parables and teachings of the Savior, and other things of a more allegorical character. He says that after the resurrection of the dead, there will be a period of 1,000 years when Christ's kingdom will be set up on this earth in material form. I suppose he got these notions by misinterpreting the apostolic accounts and failing to grasp what they said in mystic and symbolic language. For he seems to have been a man of very small intelligence, to judge from his books. Eusebius, Hist. Eccl. Book 3, 39.11. Thus, the pseudo-intellectuals and atheists who ignore the most spiritual authorities, while disparaging the immature in the folly of their misguided error, are little more than intellectual pedophiles. While the monk and yogi will proclaim that they are getting above the mind, their own imbalance and focus on the upper spiritual centers to the exclusion of the lower causes them to dwell in an opposite polarity of illusion in a different chamber of Plato's cave. Because they lack wholeness, it becomes impossible for them to achieve the next stage of birth. And while they become intoxicated by the light entering into the upper spheres of mind by meditating on the sixth spiritual center, they can't become that light, and they can't achieve soul birth because of their imbalance and lack of wholeness. Not only are the lower three earthly centers the paired opposites of the upper three heavenly centers, but the spiritual centers and associated spheres of mind are paired across the spectrum of gender as manifest in male and female. But this is not apparent unless you come to understand the holographic reality of man and woman as the cosmic sperm and ovum that must achieve the next stage of birth. Moreover, while in our divided reality as man or woman, we exist as an ego self, or embryonic soul image, our true being is manifest in the higher reality of our soul, or soul self, that is the being of light encountered in the near-death experience, NDE. In the same way that a sperm or ovum is not representative of the whole person, we are not representative of the wholeness of our soul or higher soul self. And because the womb of our physical mothers is simply not the environment necessary to develop the mind and bring about the next stage of birth, our soul image is connected in a fetus that is born into this world, divided across the spectrum of cosmic ovum and sperm in the womb of Mother Earth, which world presents to us the necessary environment to bring about the expansion of mind and consciousness in the quest to initiate the next stage of soul birth. And man and woman who possess the potential to initiate and fulfill the laws which bring about this next stage of birth must develop those areas of mind that are beyond the level of organic consciousness. Our modern culture, which is consumed with explicit and rampant sex, attempts to portray biblical morality as being out of date and the product of undue restraint. Yet, it is our modern culture that is bound by its ignorance of man's higher soul and spiritual reality. When Jesus healed by making the person whole, he eliminated and dissipated the negative connections in that person's etheric field/mind that inhibited them from progressing in the way. That these negative connections of mind are initiated by sex with a multitude of partners and often result in physical disease and maladies is because these negative connections not only interfere with the flow of vital life force, but drain the person of necessary energy needed to bring about the expansion of the mind through connections to others. In the case of the gospel account of the woman at the well who could not receive the living waters due to the fact that she did not have a husband, see woman at the well. Her connection to five other men was easily seen and detected by Jesus in her etheric field/mind. Moreover, because she was anchored to five men and could not therefore even have a husband, her lifestyle and flatline mindset inhibited her from receiving the living waters of the Spirit. See Lilith, the demonic reality of the modern feminist movement. And it was for this very reason with respect to connections in the etheric field/mind that anchored people to this world, that Jesus condemned even looking on another person who was not your spouse with lust, that is. You have heard that it was said to those of old, "You shall not commit adultery." But I say to you that whoever looks at a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. Matt 5:27-28 NKJ. See Divine Pattern. When we have sex with a person, we initiate a lasting connection between the etheric fields that act as routes and gateways upon which a constant flow of thoughts and mental impressions travel between people. And it is these connections from mind to mind with other people that inhibit and even obstruct us from achieving a state of oneness on a higher level with our spouse. And this results in either a loss of vital life force in the case of a man, or the bombardment of invading thoughts in the case of a woman, and is why Jesus warned about even looking on a woman with lust, or in the case of a woman, attempting to attract the attentions of a man who is not her husband. And that the mystic visionaries who composed the scriptures understood reality from a higher etheric level that organic man is blind to, is the reason why the scriptures are so consumed with sexual purity and marriage. See Lilith. If we draw a vertical line through the middle of the triangle from to top bottom, we can begin to grasp the solution with respect to the laws that must be overcome. The two horizontal points on the base of the triangle are embedded in the outer columns of the tree of duality, and for this duality to be overcome, the angles must be equal and reversed with respect to the laws that will bring about the evolution of the center point, where normal male/female physical and emotional interaction will remain earthbound with the third force balance remaining of the horizontal plane. When a husband and wife work on evolving the mind and thinking of each other as both male and female in harmonic balance while evolving that third force, which is the sum of that union of one flesh, while seeking the higher truth of mind that is manifest in their soul and the higher reality of the kingdom that is manifest in their spiritual nature, then the duality is overcome in the third force balance. And the alchemical transformation is brought about through the application of the laws and forces of creation, which manifest completion within the divine marriage. The objective is to elevate one's mind and being to the higher soul plane of reality. One of the problems is seen in the fact that there is no duality of male or female on the soul plane, and yet our higher soul plane is the result of all duality of male and female raised up in perfect balance and wholeness. Our higher soul self is neither male nor female, and this higher reality cannot be reached when our thoughts and mindset are imbued with the duality of male or female, that is, the fruit of the tree of duality. Yet, within the environment of a divine marriage where male and female have been merged into one flesh, Matt 19:6, this duality of mind and being can be overcome, and the original pattern of Adam/Eve manifest within the reality of husband and wife. In order to accomplish this transformation, the husband and wife must seek to make themselves a holy and consecrated final temple where the lower appetites of the animal consciousness of the body are raised up to their highest expression as portrayed in the presentation. See temple. And it was this reference to the law that Jesus stated not one jot or tittle would be negated till all is completed. but an all-important reality of law must be recognized and observed if this spiritual alchemical transformation is to be brought about in its final manifestation as a triangle. Each of the male/female horizontal opposites are themselves equal points in a triangle that they are themselves part of, and they are the center of, which means that the male and female opposites must not only reflect each other in the reverse of their polarities, but that the laws that form the linear connection on the earth plane, as well as the linear connection which arises into the heavenly plane, must all be equal and harmonically balanced. And while this may sound complex to many, this is exactly what happens in the physical process of birth, which every succeeding level is patterned after. In the same that the genetics of an embryo must have a perfectly balanced chromosomal balance across the DNA of mother and father, in order for the third force of the offspring to begin to evolve into a fetus and be born as an infant, so too must the balance of male and female opposite impressions of mind manifest this same harmonic balance between husband and wife in a divine marriage. Man as an embryonic soul image. In the above, I have made a number of references to Gospel of Thomas saying 84, where I demonstrate that the religious world's understanding of reincarnation is fatally flawed, see X-Files, which means that the vast majority of religious people simply possess no real understanding of the inner spiritual concepts of their own scriptures and beliefs. If the ego self represents the consciousness of the body, and the body physically dies, then this ego self can't enter the higher spiritual realms, because it is of the earth, and has no real permanence beyond the grave in its present form. And at the above link, I use an X-File scenario in order to demonstrate that the person whose consciousness is of the earth has no real permanence beyond the grave, because it never developed while in the earth, and was ruled over by the carnal nature of the ego self. With respect to the counterfeit New Age doctrine of reincarnation, such a person that is controlled by the ego self cannot be said to reincarnate. The soul image or essence self, which in Gospel of Thomas saying 84 never really developed, because it was ruled over by the ego self or false personalities of the organic body, begins to develop after it is freed from the limitations of the body upon physical death. And as stated in the below, the body consciousness, which is centered in the lower three earthly kingdoms, being freed from the body form of the fourth kingdom, when the soul image was implanted at conception, this body consciousness, which is often called the ego self, is returned to the forms of the earth that are representative of its level of evolution. What this means is that the whole concept of either reincarnation or the Christian idea of going to heaven are all basically counterfeit. As stated in the Gospel of Philip, those who say that first they shall die and then they shall arise are confused. If they do not first receive the resurrection while they live, they will not receive anything when they die. See, the only time that the kingdom can come as portrayed in the Gospels is when a person is still alive in the physical body and is able to bring about the next stage of birth, and the soul can bring about wholeness and balance of the 12 spheres of mind thereby, eating the fruit of the tree of life and accomplishing what Jesus said with respect to the next stage of birth and entering the kingdom. Wholeness must be achieved while in the body vessel, which is of the fourth kingdom, and has the potential to balance and make the three heavenly spiritual centers and the three earthly spiritual centers one. Without the body vessel, this cannot be accomplished in an after-death state, and the suppression of the ego self or earth consciousness in the monastic mindset does not develop that lower point by making it the good ground that brings forth completeness. While what is revealed in the Gospel of Thomas saying 84 may sound strange to the modern Christian, it represents an important foundational teaching that was removed from the Gospels by the later pagan Church of Rome. See, what is our true nature and form? Our soul/higher self is the being of light that many people encounter in the published accounts of what is known as the near-death experience, see being of light. And one of the secrets that is unknown today is the fact that you need not physically die in order to come into the presence of the being of light within you that is your true soul self. But herein lies the problem. Men and women look at their reflected image in a mirror, and they think they are seeing the true being that they are. And thus, because of man's own ignorance of his true self and form, this higher reality could not be revealed to men of a carnal mindset. Yet, if each person is to overcome the ignorance of this world, then it is important to begin to recognize the reality of self that is being portrayed in the Gospel of Thomas saying 84, and is conveyed in the words, Jesus said, "When you see your likeness, you rejoice. But when you see your images which came into being before you, and which neither die nor become manifest, how much you will have to bear. It states your likeness and your images. It does not say, when you see God, and this is because you dwell within the reality of your own soul self, and it is your soul self that is in the above portrayed as your likeness that dwells within God. We only dwell within God by proxy. And this is why Paul states to the Corinthians, but if anyone loves God, this one is known by him, NKJ, which states that those who do not love God are not even known by him. And to the Galatians he writes, but now after you have known God, or rather are known by God, how is it that you turn again to the weak and beggarly elements, to which you desire again to be in bondage? Gal 4, 9 NKJ, few comprehend the reality of the words, or rather are known by God. But those who can only receive the one talent in the parable of the talents, see parable of the talents, cannot hear the living words spoken of at John 5:24 that permits them to cross over from death to life, because they are the walking dead that Jesus spoke of, who cannot hear or see beyond the physical. See, the dead know nothing, because they are carnal, and have only advanced through the first stage of physical birth. They fail to know themselves, and they dwell in the poverty of darkness, which is inherent in the womb of Mother Earth. With respect to this organic condition of dark ignorance that is expressed by the early church writer Ephraim, who is called the great light of the Syrian church of the 4th century, when he warned believers, thou canst not hear his words, while thou dost not know thyself. And with respect to our inner soul self, this great truth is again sounded by Melito, who explained, wherefore I counsel thee to know thyself, and to know God. For understand how that there is within thee that which is called the soul, by it the eye seeth, by it the ear heareth, but why this world was made, and why it passes away, and why the body exists, and why it falls to decay, and why it continues, thou canst not know until thou hast raised thy head from this sleep in which thou art sunk. Melito, Bishop of Sardis, Bishop of Ithaca, and Bishop of Ithaca, AD 160-177. Who are we? What are we? Until you can first answer these questions, you will remain totally ignorant of both God and your own higher soul reality. We cannot even be known by God, so long as we remain a divided expression of our higher soul self. Only when we overcome our divided natures and bring about the next stage of birth, where we manifest our soul self in the body, can we even begin to know God and be known by God. The Gospel of Thomas states, Jesus said, when you see your likeness, you rejoice. And it is this likeness that is our own source of being, our soul self, who is the being of light in the near-death experience. And the Gospel of Thomas asks the question, but when you see your images which came into being before you, and which neither die nor become manifest, how much you will have to bear. These images which came into being before you are the past lives that your soul self has previously lived, that have all failed to bring about the next stage of soul birth that Jesus taught was necessary to enter the kingdom, and thus, these past life images remain only as the experiences of failed lives that never became manifest. The reality of man's plight in this world is that he is an embryonic image of his pre-existent soul that has entered into this realm in order to perfect those laws and elements that he must overcome. In the same way that a fetus is an embryonic copy of its parents, our mind is an embryonic image of our soul. In the same way a fetus must grow and mature in accordance with the pattern of its parents, our mind must grow and mature in the pattern of our soul. When our mind grows in the culture of this world and becomes alienated from our soul, then our life becomes synonymous with the miscarriage of a fetus whose defect fails to develop it in accordance with its physical genetic pattern. The enigma of time and the soul of man. Returning to the statements and facts presented in the subheading The Great Allegory of Mind and Matter, when the reality is understood that we are ultimately dwelling within the mind of God, that is, for in him we live and move and have our being. As some of your own poets have said, we are his offspring, Acts 17:28 NIV. And this biblical statement of fact is connected with the statement of James Jeans that the universe begins to look more like a great thought than like a great machine. Or the words of Arthur Eddington, the stuff of the universe is mind stuff. Then we can begin to contemplate the higher reality of the soul within the foundational construct of what is biblically portrayed as the Alpha and the Omega of creation. To understand the relationship of the images in Gospel of Thomas saying 84, to the higher reality of the soul as the being of light, it is imperative to comprehend that not only time does not exist, sea time may not exist, as portrayed within the limitations of unenlightened human perception. But it is impossible to understand the higher reality of the soul without comprehending that time is a dimension of mind that can be moved in by those who overcome the limits of organic consciousness. In the foregoing, I demonstrate the fraudulent nature of man's common belief in reincarnation by using the Gospel of Thomas, saying 84, as a point of reference. Consider the reality presented in the words that, "But when you see your images which came into being before you, and which neither die nor become manifest, how much you will have to bear," which indicates that these past life images that never did become manifest through the process of soul birth continue to exist in their unmanifest form within the higher reality of the soul. Therefore, we must pose the question as to how the past continues to exist in the present. Thus, the enigmatic reality portrayed in the words, "The meaning of time has become terribly problematic in contemporary physics," says Simon Saunders, a philosopher of physics at the University of Oxford. "The situation is so uncomfortable that by far the best thing to do is declare oneself an agnostic. See, time may not exist." Going one step further is the profound statement that one finds that time just disappears from the Wheeler-DeWitt equation, says Carlo Rovelli, a physicist at the University of the Mediterranean in Marseille, France. It is an issue that many theorists have puzzled about. It may be that the best way to think about quantum reality is to give up the notion of time, that the fundamental description of the universe must be timeless. Quoting an equally important statement in the above article, "The possibility that time may not exist is known among physicists as the problem of time. It may be the biggest, but it is far from the only temporal conundrum. Vying for second place is this strange fact. The laws of physics don't explain why time always points to the future. All the laws, whether Newton's, Einstein's, or the quirky quantum rules, would work equally well if time ran backward, as far as we can tell. Though, time is a one-way process. It never reverses, even though no laws restrict it. With respect to the higher reality of the soul within which all the images that incarnate into this world simultaneously dwell, it is important to recognize the concept set forth in the Discovery article on time in the words. As Rovelli explains it, in quantum mechanics, all particles of matter and energy can also be described as waves. And waves have an unusual property. An infinite number of them can exist in the same location. If time and space are one day shown to consist of quanta, the quanta could all exist piled together in a single dimensionless point. Space and time in some sense melt in this picture, says Rovelli. There is no space anymore. There are just quanta kind of living on top of one another without being immersed in a space. While it is true that the soul of man evolves over the course of many lifetimes, it is also paradoxically true that the flawed concept that the soul reincarnates after passing through the proverbial cloud of forgetfulness, as proposed by the Eastern religions and the New Age, simply has no factual basis in reality, and that the belief in reincarnation in the pattern that the New Age promotes must be seen as a fraud. We can observe this enigma of Eastern teachings in the article entitled "The Awakening of Primal Knowledge" by Dr. Ashok K. Gangadhian in Parabola, the Magazine of Myth and Tradition, Spring 1997, where Dr. Gangadhian writes, "Socrates introduces the remarkable thesis that primal knowledge is inscribed in the soul but is lost, repressed, or forgotten when the soul suffers the trauma of embodied existence. This is a perennial theme in the global evolution of thought, that humans live between two contrasting worlds or dimensions, the eternal and the temporal. The natural world of the soul is the eternal world, the dimension of being, wherein the psyche realizes its immortal life. The world of the body is existence in space and time, the place of fleeting, ever-changing experience. Immortal life is the higher life of primal knowing. Mortal life is the physical, biological life of the embodied psyche. In crossing between dimensions, the soul's innate knowledge is forgotten. For Socrates, the primary task of human existence is to remember. To remember is to awaken our higher rational powers, and to retrieve the knowledge hidden within. The human mind has great difficulty in comprehending man's paradoxical nature. Why? Because the organic mind of man insists on seeing himself as singular, whereas his mind and being is divided across the spectrum of the threefold self, encompassing seven kingdoms. And while on one level each segment of mind appears to be singular and independent, each of the segments remain intimately connected.
Soul.
In light of this self-knowledge possessed only by the true Gnostic, we must pose the question, is this really what Socrates stated? It is important to take notice of the words. In crossing between dimensions, the soul's innate knowledge is forgotten. The question is, who says that the soul, which is immortal and has existed since the dawn of time, is that part of self that enters the body? Thus, we must pose the question, does the soul enter the body, or does an aspect of the soul that is an embryonic image of the soul enter the body? Further, how can the soul forget? If we discard the thinking of the fruit of the tree of duality, which brings spiritual death, and we begin to understand that what man perceives as time is merely a dimension of mind, then those who truly fulfill the axiom to know themselves must understand the words that humans live between two contrasting worlds or dimensions, the eternal and the temporal, from an entirely different perspective. It is not one or the other, but rather, part of self continues in the world or dimensions, that is, the eternal, while the other part of us is born into a body that manifests an embryonic image of self into the world or dimensions, that is, the temporal. While we can utilize the scriptures to demonstrate what is being stated, a true Gnostic or spiritually enlightened seeker is not at all dependent upon scriptures to prove the truth, which enlightened realization is the result of his own spiritual experiences. To overcome and enter the higher reality of the soul is the objective of the scriptures, and once this objective is fulfilled, the entering within oneself provides this first-hand experiential knowledge that enlightens the true seeker to the higher reality of the soul and the mysteries of the kingdom. That such a soul is able to see important esoteric meaning that others do not, and are in fact blind to, provides the spiritually transformed Gnostic with an understanding of scripture that the organic mind of man is blind to. The Gospel of Thomas begins with the words, "Whoever finds the interpretation of these sayings will not experience death," with the understanding that the only way to find the interpretation is when they are experienced within the reality of one's own life. The interpretation cannot be taught to men of an organic mind and consciousness because of the limitations of the untransformed physical body and the three dimensions of this world. Soul symphony, time, soul octaves, spiritual cathedral. With respect to the above, each person's mind and being is as a symphony being played across the spectrum of many octaves. See the law of octaves. And what we call organic human consciousness is merely one of those octaves. Using this analogy, which is more real than most people could begin to imagine, while the symphony of mind and being is the product of a great multitude of octaves, physical man in his natural condition is blind and deaf to everything that is outside of the organic frequencies of the body vessel. Moreover, if the embryonic image of the soul, which was generated into the body at conception by the higher soul self of each person, can be portrayed as being representative of a different instrument, and each instrument only represents an aspect of self, and the higher soul self, who is the being of light, being holographically created in the image and likeness of God, contains within itself the whole spectrum of instruments, which can only incarnate one at a time, then the wholeness of the soul is representative of all the instruments and all the octaves, being simultaneously played in absolute harmony. The Gospel of Thomas states, "But if you will not know yourselves, you dwell in poverty, and it is you who are that poverty. Whoever finds himself is superior to the world, and to know thyself is to bring about that condition of wholeness where the great symphony of the soul can be played in the spiritual cathedral of the transformed final temple. In becoming whole, you become superior to the world, because the organic people of this world can only play their very limited parts on the stage of life by virtue of the laws that orchestrated the part they are playing. In contradistinction, the higher soul of man, which is the embodiment of all the instruments playing their integral part, with all the octaves being played in harmony, and it is this higher reality of the soul self that is the very force that holds up and supports the limited expression of the human organic octave, and the great symphony of the soul continues regardless of man's very limited awareness. What this means is that the symphony of the soul is presently playing, but because man has, through his own previous actions, caused himself to be cast into what Jesus portrayed as the outer darkness of mind and being, or what Plato portrayed as the cave of illusions, organic man remains totally unaware of the symphony of the soul that is being played within the greater depths of his mind and being. To further develop the analogy, during the playing of the soul symphony, one player is excused to work on their piece in one of the practice rooms of this world. At no time can it be said that the one player represents the entire membership of the symphony. The soul symphony does not cease playing while the one member works on their part in what would appear to be a state of seclusion. and neither can the soul symphony enter into the practice room while the one member is working on their individual part. Yet, the whole objective of the member retiring to the practice room is to perfect their piece and better support the symphony of the soul being played by the whole. For a man or woman to think of themselves as the whole of their being would be synonymous with a flute proclaiming that it is an orchestra that is playing a great symphony. And while many people's ego might imagine such a thing, they simply have no sense of true higher mind and being. What psychologists often portray as the unconscious or subconscious is the great symphony of the soul that is playing, while the person in this world is confined in a practice room working on their individual part. When psychologists make reference to the subconscious, they do this by virtue of their ignorance of the cosmology of mind and being. In the words of the Gospel of Thomas, they dwell in poverty, and whoever finds himself and the soul symphony that is being played within oneself beyond the barriers of organic consciousness is superior to the world.